Sometimes feeling the touch of the Lord's
lotus hand, lotus hands, he became spiritually jubilant and remained silent, his hairs standing on end and tears gliding down from his half-closed eyes because of his love for the Lord. Purport. When a devotee feels separation from the Lord, he becomes eager to see where the Lord is. And sometimes when he feels pangs of separation, tears flow incessantly from his half-closed eyes. As stated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshashtaka, Yugayitam nimeshena chakshusha pravishayitam. The words chakshusha pravishayitam refer to tears falling incessantly from the devotee's eyes. These symptoms, which appear in pure devotional ecstasy, were visible in the body of Prahlad Maharaj. Within the chapter Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe, a description of Prahlad Maharaj's ecstasy in pure love of Krishna appears. From this we can learn that however bad the external circumstances might be, a devotee who is fixed in Krishna consciousness is never disturbed and always blissful. We can measure our own level of advancement. There are different ways of measuring. One way is that how much we remain undisturbed in difficult circumstances and concentrate on our service to the Lord. Another example is Arjuna, who did become disturbed, apparently, when his son Abhimanyu was killed. He became very disturbed and made what Krishna told him was a foolish vow, that if I don't kill this Jayadrath before the end of the day's fighting tomorrow, then I'll enter into fire and kill myself. Which Krishna told him, that was a stupid thing to do. But what to do? In distress, strong emotions, we tend to do things and say things which in a more cool-headed moments we wouldn't do. In Mauritius once, at the end of a lecture, Srila Prabhupada was challenged by an Indian man that how is it that Arjuna, after hearing Bhagavad Gita from Krishna, he should have been stithadhi muni, he should have been fixed without being disturbed in any. Again and again, Krishna says that Sukhe duke same kritva. Again and again in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives this theme that one should be the same in happiness or distress. And then Arjuna, he became so distressed at the death of Abhimanyu. And then again, putradara grihadishu asakta anabhishvanga putradara grihadishu. Lord Krishna states the symptoms of one in knowledge is that he's not attached to sons, wife or wives, and home. But Arjuna became so disturbed. Prabhupada said that is natural, but that he was situated on the transcendental platform is apparent in that he did not give up his service. He went on with his service. So it's not that there aren't feelings, but a devotee, he remains on the transcendental platform, he remains fixed in service, as Srila Prabhupada is quoting here, Shikshashtaka. Lord Chaitanya said, even in the most difficult circumstances, the most difficult circumstances he could imagine is being rejected by Krishna, but still I'll go on worshipping you, Krishna. So Prahlad Maharaj was in a very difficult circumstance, which none of us could imagine being in. He didn't have any association. He was under constant threat of death. And not just threat, but deliberate attacks That was to come a little later. But he remained in ecstasy, remembering Krishna. But at the same time, he was not there, he was unaware of the position in the world. He instructed Hiranyakashipu, which made Hiranyakashipu even, he was anyway angry by nature. That made him more angry to be instructed by him. He wanted to instruct his son, and his son Prahlad instructed him. In exactly the opposite of what everything Hiranyakashipu believed in, everything he lived for, everything he'd sacrificed his life for becoming Asurya Varya, for becoming the topmost demon in the history of the world. And he did it. And Prahlad told him, basically, that you're just a fool. You don't know what the goal of life is. So Prahlad is feeling he's experiencing ecstasy. And this ecstasy, this is genuine. That he's not imitating that. He's completely absorbed in pure love of Krishna. And absorbed in pure love of Krishna, he's forgetting. Sometimes it's like kvachit. Sometimes he forgets everything around him. But then, when he comes in association with his schoolmates at an opportune time, he preaches to them. When he is called by Hiranyakashipu, tell me what's the best thing you've learned. He instructs him, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, etc. Hearing and chanting about Krishna. So, practically, he lives in two worlds. Actually, he's in the consciousness of, always in Krishna consciousness, but sometimes internal, completely absorbed only in thought of Krishna. And sometimes in consciousness of Krishna with the consciousness that others are not Krishna conscious and they should be benefited. Naivod vijay paraduryataya vaitaranyastvad virya gayana mahamrita magna chittam shocheta tovi mukha chetasa indriyata. What's the last line? Maya sukhaya bharamudvahato vimigha. He later told Lord Nrsimhadev that I'm happy. I never had any problem. You came to save me. Actually, I was happy anyway. Just remembering you. I didn't have any problem, actually. But I'm lamenting for all these others who have problems not remembering you. So, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that stated he had three levels of consciousness. He is completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, in Krishna Leela, in participating in Krishna Leela. Even though he appears to be in this plane, but on the Hriday Mon, Amar Mon Vrindavan, Moramon Vrindavan, that others, their mind, they're materially contaminated. Mind is their heart, all their thoughts for sense gratification. But mind is fully in Vrindavan, and he exhibited symptoms, especially in the last 18 years, he was mostly in this internal consciousness of being absorbed in pure ecstasy of being with Krishna, even though he appeared to be, to external vision, to be a sannyasi here in this world. Then he had external consciousness in which he would be with his devotees and interact with them and accept their invitations, and then halfway, somewhere in between. So pure devotees who live in this world, some of them, they're completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness with no external consciousness. An example of that, Raghunath Das Goswami, a lot of the time he simply wasn't aware of what was going on all around him because he was elsewhere. He was not participating in the world in which he could be seen by all others around him. But he was in the spiritual world where there are so many instances of him standing on the bank of Radha Kund, the tiger is coming to drink water, he's completely unaware, and the heat is so much that Radharani is coming and holding her sari to shelter him, and then Sanatana Goswami is chastising Raghunath Das Goswami. What are you doing? You're supposed to be serving Radharani. And she's going, oh, really? She's coming and serve me. Sorry. All right, well, you better build a hut for you so you can sit and be sheltered. Otherwise, Radharani will have to come and serve you. Or his indigestion leela, he doesn't eat more than a little palmful of buttermilk and maybe one or two chickpeas. And then he gets sick and he's complaining of indigestion. And how can you have indigestion? There's nothing to digest. And the doctor comes and says, he's got indigestion from eating too much sweetness. So, what's this? He's not a cheating Swami who fasts in the day and tells everyone he's fasting and then snucks up at night. He's not like that. So, that became apparent that Raghunath Das Goswami, in his form as a gopi in the spiritual world, was overindulging in sweetness. So, was he here or was he there or where is he? It's difficult for us to understand. Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj lived in even day or night. That's what is day, what is night? No consciousness. Only in the morning he would say a few prayers to his deities. Otherwise, people would speak to him and he wasn't not even aware that they're there. Completely absorbed in that consciousness. But there's generally devotees who come to this world, they hide that. If they come for the sake of preaching, and if they're simply absorbed in that internal consciousness, then it's very difficult to preach to people, because for a start, you on the topmost Vaishnava platform, one thinks everyone's already a devotee except me. And one can't communicate with others. Preaching means to catch people on the platform they're at and somehow bring their attention to Krishna consciousness. So a devotee comes down, pure devotee comes down to the Madhyam Adhikar platform, to a lower platform where apparently one is not it may appear that one is not experiencing the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness, because talks with people, walks with them, eats, sleeps, and in many ways appears like an ordinary person. Especially in the modern age, our recent acharyas, they have been. That means Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they've been very reserved in the matter of demonstrating their ecstasy, which is apparent in their activities, because if they were not on the platform of Prahlad Maharaj, on the platform of pure devotees, of being so much absorbed in love of Krishna, then how could they have done what they did? Why should they sacrifice to do what they did? How could they express in their writings this pure love for Krishna and communicate that to others? That is not possible for ordinary persons to inject the world with pure Krishna consciousness. We find from the activities and especially the writings of our great acharyas, how they were totally absorbed in love of Krishna and communicating that to others. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his songs are like a complete course in Krishna consciousness, demonstrating the miseries of this material world, the entanglement of the jiva in the material world, his turning to Krishna, calling out to Krishna, gradually advancing in Krishna consciousness, taking pleasure in Krishna consciousness, and right up to Vrindavan and entering into the service of Radha and Krishna. Everything is there in the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So all the recent acharyas, they were most reserved in this matter. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, we find that famously when he met Srila Ramananda Rai, and they were both unreservedly exhibiting their ecstasy of meeting each other. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, observing that there were brahmanas present, who although culturally advanced, advanced in knowledge of scripture, they had no idea about Krishna consciousness. And they were shocked to see a sannyasi embracing who they considered to be a shudra, and both of them acting in a manner which no doubt these brahmins had never seen before. Maybe they heard about it, because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he first saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in ecstatic faint, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first entered Jagannath's temple, that time Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a hardcore Mayavadi, committed. But he also recognized, when he brought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his house, he put some cotton swab before Mahaprabhu's nose and saw there was slight movement. And he recognized that this is Ashta Shatvik Vikar. These are symptoms of ecstasy. So he knew, as a great scholar of Shastra, even though he was a Mayavadi, he recognized that these are symptoms of the highest level of bhakti. So the brahmanas, they knew. They weren't all as learned. They weren't as learned as Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. But they were shocked. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, seeing persons who were not devotees, who are not sajati, that word is used, sajati and vijati, they were not part of the inner group, they were not fit for seeing this. It's not suitable for their spiritual advancement to see this. They will doubt. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu restrained himself at that time. And again, especially our recent acharyas, they have restrained themselves from exhibiting symptoms of ecstasy, although doubtlessly they are experiencing that at every moment. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to, when he was living at Godrum, as a daily function, when Siddhant Saraswati, before he took sannyas, Siddhant Saraswati would daily in the early afternoon, he would recite Chaitanya Charitamrita with Bhaktivinoda Thakur would be present and a few devotees. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, time to time, would interject some comments. And time to time, he would get up and start dancing in ecstasy, just hearing Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that was his internal ecstasy, hearing the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But outwardly, he appeared as a staid magistrate, moral, highly moral. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also, very moral person. He later on told that when I approached Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj for the first time, when he approached him for taking initiation, I was considering myself a great scholar, expert in debate. Let anyone come and meet me, any big scholar, and I'll cut them into pieces, all their arguments. I'll powder them into dust. So I was thinking like this. I'm a great scholar. I'm expert in mathematics and astronomy. I'm very moral. I come from an aristocratic family. All these things which I considered very important and which others considered very important. When I went to see Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he was not in the slightest bit impressed by any of these things. So then I considered that this person, if he's not impressed by all these things which seem to me so important, then what must he have? that is so much more valuable than everything I think is important, everyone else thinks important, he must be having something much better. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was enacting the pastime of being a proud scholar, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had also enacted the pastime of being a proud scholar. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after meeting Ishwara Puri at Gaya and taking initiation from him, became a madman. He became disturbed at what happened. I took initiation. You're supposed to take initiation and chant a mantra, and then you're supposed to become very sober and calm and fixed in spiritual knowledge. And just the opposite happened to me. Kiba mantra dilogoshai kiba tarbal japete japete mantra karelam pagal. What happened? My dear guru, what happened? You gave me a mantra, I thought I'd become very steady-minded by doing so, but instead I became insane. And Ishwarapur said, good, that's what it's supposed to do. Now go and make everyone else insane. Which is what he did. He came back from Gaya a changed person, apparently. Previously he had been, apparently, a great scholar taking pleasure in smashing people's theories, having them make a theory, he would defeat their theory, and then they'd think, he's given a much better theory. Then he'd defeat his own theory with another better theory. But it's his pride of scholarship gone, he was simply mad in love of Krishna. They thought he was literally mad and recommended some Ayurvedic treatment, put Vishnu oil on his head that will calm him down. His life airs are disturbed, so he needs some oil on his head. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared insane like this. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, after taking initiation from Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he also, from the worldly point of view, became a madman. He had the opportunity for a good career already, actually. He had already blown it in college. He had criticized everyone in the college that you don't know what you're talking about, even the principal. And he left the college, otherwise he probably would have been thrown out for challenging all their theories on mathematics and astronomy. He left college, which in those days there weren't college dropouts. He was probably the first in history. We're all following in a good tradition here. So he dropped out. And he got a job as an aide in the Maharaj of Tripura's what's that called? Bureau? Bikram Kishore Manikko. He's got a lot longer name, if you like. So then he got a good job, and then again he left that, and he became like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, another madman, living on the bank of the, living in a jungle, in the wilderness of Mayapur, with no civilized people around. Of course, the only civilized people in the universe are all present in Mayapur. And all the uncivilized people who are interested in material advancement are in Calcutta, but he left Calcutta and went to Mayapur, which at that time was just a jungle. There was no path, no road. The only path was through the rice fields. A little path, a slight, small path. So he was living there as renounced as Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, living like that. Then after he... living in ecstasy of chanting the holy names. To us it sounds very austere. He was chanting and chanting and just in a grass hut. And when it would rain, he'd have a tattered umbrella he'd put up and go on chanting. And he'd follow Chaturmas by the system of go-grass that you put some khichdi with no spices and no ghee and no salt. Put it on the floor, sit, bend down, and with your hands behind your back, and as much as you can eat, That's it for the day, folks. That's all. So, living very austere life, but that, from his platform of consciousness, we can understand that that austerity wasn't austerity, that was his ecstasy of absorption in chanting the holy name. Didn't cut his hair, hardly ate, didn't make practically no arrangements for bodily sustenance or even protection from the wind and the rain and the cold. But as far as he was concerned, he was just in the ecstasy of chanting the holy names. I suppose we can all, I can say we're a long way from that, isn't it? If it's too hot or too cold or there's any disturbance, I can't chant my rounds. And recently someone told me there was one, yeah, it was a disciple of mine actually, he said that his brother had been arrested and it was a great disgrace to the whole family, and he's so disturbed, he can't chant his rounds, he hadn't been chanting his rounds for a few days. And I told him, you should chant more. When there's difficulty, you should chant more. But the tendency is to chant less. When everything's nice, first of all, I'll have a nice house, a nice car, and plenty of money, and nice prasadam, then I can chant. But we see the great devotee, this platform, they're not even interested in with a little bit more time and endeavor, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur could have made a more comfortable cottage to live in. But as a transcendental madman, he didn't. He wasn't interested. Later, after he took sannyas, it appeared that upon taking sannyas, he became less renounced. He was living a life of total renunciation, just like Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. But then later on, he founded Chaitanya Mart, and later on Gauriya Mart, and so big arrangements, big palace later came in Bagh Bazar, so many centers, and you can go and see his bed. It's a big wooden bed, looks very comfortable. What happened to his renunciation? He himself told the story of the Bhagavad Gita for the palace for reciting Bhagavad Gita. The guru sent his disciple, you just recite Bhagavad Gita. So he went to live in a cave and no one will disturb me here, I'll recite Bhagavad Gita. Then when he's going for his bath, he finds that the mouse is chewing the Bhagavad Gita, so he gets a cat to look after the mouse. And the cat's not satisfied in eating a stray mice and eats some milk, so he gets a cow. And then who's going to look after the cow? He gets a wife. And then, now I can read Bhagavad Gita very nicely. And the wife says, well, I'm not going to live in this cave. So then he gets a job and a big house. And the guru comes to visit him after some years and say, yeah, what happened? I told you to read Bhagavad Gita. He says, it's all for Bhagavad Gita. It's only because you told me to read Bhagavad Gita that I got all this. But that's true. I forgot about reading Bhagavad Gita. What was that again? Okay, let's... So it would seem that he himself had become more materialistic. But clearly for a devotee who's so much absorbed in chanting the holy names that he can't even be bothered to build a residence and just goes on chanting day and night, and he's practically not eating or sleeping, just hardly enough to keep body and soul together, then clearly such a devotee is on the highest platform of transcendental ecstasy. Even if he appears to be a worldly person, he deliberately appeared as a worldly person in some ways so that worldly people would come to listen to him, because they didn't come to listen to Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Worldly people would come to him and he would give them an ultimatum, just like this Kashim Bazar Raja, Nandi. He came to invite Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, please come to my palace and bless my palace by your presence. And Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, I've got a better idea. Why don't you stay here with me? You want my association? Well, I'm here now. You forget your palace and just stay with me. That will be better for both of us. If I go to your palace, I might become like you. So better you stay with me. And he said, well, very nice meeting you, Babaji Maharaj. And Hare Krishna, see you later. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he just gave an ultimatum. He didn't accept disciples. He didn't want to be bothered by people with, you know, all their problems and, you know, my this problem, that problem, the other problem. He just wanted to chant Hare Krishna. And why? What's wrong with you? Why aren't you in full ecstasy? You're in Maya. Yeah, he didn't give any opportunity that you either be completely Krishna conscious or forget it. And even people came around him and they thought he was their disciple, but he only allowed if they're on the highest standard. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gave a bridge. We hear about bridge preaching. So the bridge is that, all right, you have some facility, come and listen. You can come in your pant and shirt, nice dress. You can sit on a chair on the same level as me. You don't have to, if you don't want, you don't have to sit at my feet if you feel that you're a very respectable person. But just come and listen. Listen and hear what I have to. That was the point he stressed more. Even more than chanting. Everything he did was for the sake of bringing people to chant. But he said, come and hear. Come and hear and hear. All his facility is just so that people can hear about the message of Godhead. So he expressed his ecstasy was expressed that let us do whatever is required to bring people, put them on the path so they can come to the platform of pure ecstasy of love of Krishna. I'm supposed to finish at 8:45, I can see from the, can just about read it. It looks like it got wet, so all the Bhagavatam speakers are crying in ecstasy. Looks like that, like Gadadhar Pandit. He had to teach Srinivasa Acharya Bhagavatam, but I can't read it anymore because every time I read, I cry and all the... It's unreadable, so go and get another one. So I can still read. Please finish the class before 8:45. So is there any question on this? Yes.
During that eating,
during Chaturmas, he would do this Gograhas, so we're told. During Chaturmas, when he was doing his Shatakoti Nam Vrata, he was his vow to chant a billion names. During Chaturmas, he would do like that. But other times also, he wasn't indulgent, that's for sure. There were what there was there to eat anyway. If you're out in the field, practically people out in the villages in Bengal, anyway, they only eat rice and dal. If they can get some salt and some spices in season, they'll take vegetables and fish if they're non-devotees. That's what they eat. There is nothing luxurious. If we had to join the Gauriya Math in those days, I don't know if any of us could make it. We're all, Prabhupada saw, we need prasad. We just said yesterday, Mother Nata Gopal was saying, what would this movement be without its feasts? Yesterday I was speaking with Vichit Chavirya Prabhu, who some of you may know, he's living close to here. So I didn't speak with him for over 30 years, although I can't forget how much he helped me when I first came to Prabhupada's lotus feet. So I remember one time I was new in the temple there, in Bury Place in London. And that temple was, in a movement of feasts and prasadam, that temple was famous for feasts. And in those days, to fly from America to India, the planes, they didn't fly direct. I don't think they fly direct even now, is it? I don't know. So the planes would stop in London, generally, and devotees, they would stop over in London for darshan of Radha Landanishra, and also for the prasad of Radha Landanishra, which was famous. So one time after a feast, you had to climb, how many flights? 6 flights of stairs to the Brahmachari ashram. And then above that is the attic. So regularly after the feast, the Brahmacharis would be stretched out, groaning on the Brahmachari room floor. And incapable? They're rendered incapable for at least an hour or so afterwards. So I asked Vichitravirya Prabhu, that why after these feasts everyone just crashes out, as the language was in those days. So why did Prabhupada allow us to have these feasts? And he immediately replied, because if he didn't, we'd all bloop. So we need prasadam and nice facilities and all these things. Otherwise, how could we have come? Although Prabhupada, of course, he also was recommending it's time to go to the farms and live simply. Because to make all these facilities, you get involved in money making and then association with non-devotees, and money making business in itself is, unless one is very advanced, tends to be entangling. So that's another perspective also. Yeah, please.
Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Chakravarti Thakur's life since you are mentioning is very unique. I always adored how great personality has adopted this for me at least. I went to Jagannath temple many times, but I was never. But somehow or other, something clicked on Ishkan and I came. And I still think about it. What was that? I don't know. So Prabhupada has given even more. One of the Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Chakravarti's life was that when he was giving speech, he noticed there was one minister came from Calcutta and he was listening, but every 15 minutes he goes out to smoke hookah.
Mm.
What do you call in English?
Hookah. I don't think there's a hubble bubble.
So then,
it's not part of the Western culture. It's from the Arab world and India like that. Yeah.
So next day he told one of his assistants, said, arrange a hookah here so he doesn't have to go out and spend time. Our Harikatha was so important. So
yeah.
Next day he came and he saw the hookah was there. He was so embarrassed. Then
I never heard that story. Who told you that?
This is from Sajjan Maharaj, also my Dhammadiksha Guru Sushi Madhvakti Prabhu Namda Maharaj. He was present there. And then,
which Sajjan Maharaj? Who was the cook?
No, Santa Maharaj.
Shanta Maharaj.
Yeah,
Shanta Maharaj.
He's still present.
I didn't hear that.
He narrated this story. Then he gave up completely, that minister never ever touched cooking.
Yeah, there are many such instances, yeah. Where at Alalanath, they were complaining that the workers are smoking biddies while they're building. So he said, really? Okay, if that's what they need, he went and made the biddy for them. Then Janakinath Bose, father of Subhash Chandra, he asked him to give up fish, and he's eating fish. And he sent one tiffin of Mahaprasad daily from the mutt in Cuttack. Here's another one you're saying about the importance of hearing Harikatha. When he was speaking to Nafa Chandra Pal, it seems you know all these names, the others won't. So he was over 80 years old at that time. He'd been an associate with Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Anyway, that's irrelevant to this incident. So he told him that you go on hearing Harikatha. And even if you say that my son is on the verge of death, I say, let him die. Don't go away. Just go on hearing. Heavy. What's the importance of Harikatha?
But he I find Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Chakravarti was very fixed to the lotus feet of Srila Gaurakshada Babaji, because in his first best puja.
Definitely. Yeah.
One part, I think that his 50th birthday, on his best puja, his disciple asked him that Srila Gaurakshada Babaji Maharaj told you instructed
three things:
not to go to Calcutta,
not to make disciples,
yeah.
And what's the third thing? Three things which he appeared not to have: not to go to Calcutta, not to make disciples, and one other thing which I don't remember. So he said, I never made any disciples, they're all my gurus. I never went to Calcutta.
He said, I have four disciples.
At that time, in this instance.
My two hands and my two legs. Mm. And the rest of you are all my gurus.
They're all my gurus. He said, I never went to Calcutta. I came to the only went to Gauriya Math, which is the spiritual world. And one other thing he said, which I can't remember. Three things he told. My guru told me three things, and apparently he'd broken them all.
But he said that I actually did not go to Calcutta. I went for preaching, but I'm always at the lotus feet of my guru.
Yeah, but in this particular instance, he said different things at different times.
Did he apparently finish his vow? He had taken vow for 10 years chanting.
Chanting a billion names. Well, it's always said that he finished it.
I've read some biographies that he started preaching after 9 years or something.
Well, if you think about it, if he chanted 3 times 64 rounds a day over that period, he should have come out. He should have come out like that. Another thing is, one thing I was thinking is that when we say Shatakoti or whatever it should be, often in Vedic culture it seems to be an approximation, just like you see the Sahasranam is used. Often the Sahasranams, they're not exactly 1,000. Or the Shatadushani, it's not always exactly 100. Or the 1,000-pillared temple, it's not exactly 1,000. Even for that matter, 64 rounds is not exactly, it's quite a bit off 1 lakh names, although it's generally equated with it. So it may be approximate.
It's a junction, because the Sahasra Juga, I was calculating one time the Sahasra Juga, then it comes like a 900 something like
that. Yeah, many times it seems to be approximate, yeah.
Junction.
Yeah.
The junction itself also adding, so it is counted.
Yeah,
yes.
Can be. Well, it's well past 8:45, and there's a hand up. Where's the town president? What am I supposed to do?
Press on regardless.
Press on regardless. Okay. Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war.
Now, you mentioned that preaching means to catch the people where they are.
Well, it means a lot more than that, but that's one aspect, yeah.
In the extreme case, we remember when people talk about the character of Nityananda, they say he's always pure, and even if you see him coming with a question of faith, question of character is pure. So when we relate with people, in the world, the intention of sharing Christian consciousness, where
do
we make a mark
in the worship of anything? Where do we make a mark when preaching? Because we're not like Nityananda Prabhu who can go in a wine shop and remain fully pure. Well, preaching is a risk. That's always stated. It's safe not to mix with non-devotees. But actually we're never really in a safe position until we're in fully pure consciousness, because we can be sitting in Vrindavan, chanting, but we're associating with our contaminated mind. Whereas if we go and preach, then we get the shelter of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. So it's a risk. How far to go? What is the mark? Well, then we have to take guidance and associate with devotees. It may be difficult to say exactly what is the mark. When Harikesh Maharaj at the time was, Prabhupada wanted to go to Russia, and he was making objections, and I can't go, you can't get a visa, and this and that, and eventually he gave the excuse that there's nothing to eat there except meat, and Prabhupada said, eat meat if you have to, but go and preach. Prabhupada said, and actually, if he'd have done that, actually there was no need to eat meat, but even if there had been a need, if he'd followed that order of breaking the regulative principle, on Prabhupada's order, he would have been protected. Prushta Krishna, Swami at the time, he told Prabhupada, I can't chant 16 rounds, I'm so busy serving you. But Prabhupada was satisfied with his service and said, you just stay and serve me, even if you can't chant, I'll protect you. So preaching is a risk, but that is more than compensated by getting the mercy that's required to do that, the protection of Guru and Krishna and all the acharyas. So anything can be done if we're in the shelter of the acharyas. If we're not, then we're in a difficult situation. And even if one apparently falls away, one who's preached or done that service is so pleasing to Krishna that even if they apparently forget Krishna, then Krishna won't forget them. And we're seeing that in our movement as devotees who have done pioneering service, spreading this movement. Now we're discussing about the ecstasy of Prahlad Maharaj. At that time we had no idea of all this Gopi Bhav and Manjaris, and so we had no idea of any such. We learned all this actually later after Prabhupada left, and we got so many different literatures. But devotees may go away and appear to be like materialists, but we see that Prabhupada doesn't forget them, and he brings them and pulls them. So preaching is always auspicious. Prabhupada emphasized and showed that himself. Prabhupada so much spoke about Prahlad Maharaj. He was so much in the mood of Prahlad Maharaj that in 1976, Prabhupada was translating this seventh canto, and devotees were noting that Prabhupada seemed to be absorbed in a special ecstasy in the mood of Prahlad Maharaj, who, these several verses of Prahlad Maharaj show that he is completely in the mood of wanting to benefit others by giving them Krishna consciousness. So what's the mark? What's the limit? Ultimately there is no limit what we can do for Krishna. Although in our conditioned stage, we have to be careful. Not that everyone can say, okay, I'll go and eat meat and preach. It's not a normal thing to do. Usually eating meat goes against preaching anyway. Because how are you going to preach not to eat meat if you're eating meat? So Prabhupada, he said, every year go to Mayapur and become purified, then go back and preach. That was one idea Prabhupada gave for purification. Each individual, we have to see what is their capability, what they're capable of doing. What may be recommended for one person will be different for someone else. There's that other incident in Vrindavan where Prabhupada told one sannyasi, you should go and don't stay in Vrindavan. Go and sannyasi shouldn't spend more than 3 days in any place. Go on traveling. And he turned to another sannyasi and said, I want you to stay here and manage this temple. Don't ever leave. So he just said a sannyasi should travel, and then he turned to another one and said, don't travel, you stay here. So what is the mark? The mark is the order of the Guru, which following that, we can achieve all perfection. It may be different for each person. Looks like it's time for everyone to go, is that right? Yeah. Fading away. Can go on. You can go on. Not everyone has to go. All right. You can show the book table. Yeah. Well, what am I supposed to say? You have to ask me a question if I'm going to go on.
I find Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sadhguru, one of the main instructions, is that
preaching without achar is karma kanda.
Yes. That's the translation. Yeah, thank you. So then we find also one lecture I heard in MPT Prabhupada say, everybody knows. But then he added the next line. If you follow that instruction, then you'll never be entangled in the material world. So I found this is what you say, it's very steady. The Guru's agga is the most important. whatever it is, it doesn't matter.
Well, guru has to be guru. Otherwise, if the guru gives the wrong kind of instruction, then you could get in difficulties. So, yeah, actual guru, if you follow his order, then you'll never be... Actual guru, if you follow his order, then you'll never be lost. That's for sure. That's why Prabhupada... He could tell you, if necessary, you eat meat. He has the power to purify even the sinful activities. He could tell, he's preaching all over the world to chant Hare Krishna, he could tell his secretary, all right, you don't chant, I'll maintain you anyway. He can say. Yeah, please. Just let the mic come so we can all hear.
Maharaj, you're also mentioning that a pure devotee will come to the level of Majjhimanikar to preach. But I was thinking that Srila Goswami has written in his Bhaktarasana Sindhu that this is not like Majjhimanikar, like Prema Maitri, pure perfection, not this Majjhimanikar, but like Majjhimanikar. Like he's not, because this is a popular idea, the idea is that guru comes to Majjhimanikar like we're striving to be Majjhimanikar now.
Well, the point is that he discriminates. He discriminates between Ishvar and Tadadhin, between the Supreme Lord and those who are dependent upon him, and between the Bala, the foolish, innocent people, and the Dvisha, those who are atheistic. He discriminates that these persons are fit, these persons require to be preached to, otherwise a pure devotee. He sees everyone as a pure devotee, then how are you going to preach? So he discriminates.
In Upanishad, the last two lines describes those two types of pure devotees. One is Bhajan Vigyan, he realizes Bhajan. And the other one is Mindaki Sunya.
Yeah.
He has no propensity to critique because he's following this principle way of saying, he sees everyone as Krishna conscious. So still, that person coming to Majjhimanikar means he's pure devotee. But he's making this distinction. That's how
you say it? Definitely, if you have to... if one comes to the platform of a preacher, then he has to preach Bhagavad Gita, in which Lord Krishna states, for instance, Namang duskrishino murha prapadyante naradhamaha maya parhitagyana asurang bhavamashvita. Otherwise, what will he preach? You have to discriminate between those who are devotees, those who are non-devotees, different levels. Otherwise, where's the preaching? If we simply... if we speak only prayojan katha, for people who don't even know what their sambandha is, then how can they understand? It's not helpful to them. So his own personal desire is only to speak about Krishna Leela, but for the benefit of others, he speaks about sambandha, and then those who become interested, he teaches them abhidhaya. But for the pure devotee, it's not that his ecstasy is any lesser or that he's on a lower level, but he's fixed on the platform of prayojan inasmuch as he's serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire to bring people to Krishna. So he's simultaneously absorbed in internal ecstasy and apparently acting on this plane simultaneously. This much we can understand, and then by analysis, although experience is something else. Then.
What Prabhupada, just like your example of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati going to Calcutta was given. He didn't go to Calcutta.
He didn't go, yeah.
Yeah, he went to Gaudiamath. So Srila Prabhupada also said that I didn't call him rascal. Krishna says this.
Yeah.
I didn't criticize, I'm repeating what Krishna said. I had a thought, not related to that, but in your lecture you have explained very nicely. I was thinking like the commentary of Srila Vishwanatha Bhakti Thakur on natural devotion. And he explained this astusati bhav. You say that sometimes they don't make it visible, but then he explained that how it happens when the heart is in pure goodness. At that time, the heart becomes so overflowing with the ecstasy emotion that it submits itself to the life here, prana. And then the prana gets so much agitated and emotionally so excited that it travels in the body and comes in contact with five elements. When it comes in contact with earth element, it becomes stunned. So devotee becomes shocked, like Prahlad Maharaj was exhibiting. And then when it comes in contact with water element, shed tears. And then comes in contact with the air element, then Rumancha Kampa, and then the hair stands on end, like Prahlad Maharaj hair. And then he trembles, and then faltering voice. We see with Prabhupada. Prabhupada had in Gorakhpur and Allahabad. He could not control. The reason I was mentioning that the Shakti Bhav cannot be controlled, it's natural flow, but Anubhav can be controlled by the intelligence. That we dance, or if somebody is looking at it, it's not a proper dress, then I can control and go somewhere or something. But Shakti Bhav, even Prabhupada could not control. He stopped. That's so easy.
And then one time, although that was quite rare, he actually apologized for that. Also, when they asked Prabhupada, what should we do when you become stunned? And Prabhupada said, well, I don't do that very often. So he was very much he didn't want to promote something cheap, that's for sure. Cheap tears are common. Real tears are uncommon. Hare Krishna. All right, so I'll finish that.